Welcome to Belfast City Vineyard, where we are pursuing formation in the presence of Jesus, community gathered around him, and the impact he empowers us to bring in our families, city, and the world. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services. For more information, visit our website at belfastcityvineyard.com.
We're going to continue on in our Christmas sermon series. If you haven't been with us, we have been journeying through a series called What Am I Singing About? Not me personally, because I try not to sing because I've got a terrible voice, but I'll receive that, thank you. But what are we singing about when we press into our carols? Because I don't know about you, but as we step into the Christmas season, it's really easy to simply run through the motions of Christmas. We get caught up in this wave of nostalgia and fun, and we kind of drift through December thinking about a lot of other things and actually missing so much of what's happening in behind. And then we come to these carols, these things that are so familiar, and yet the words just spill out of our mouths without even thinking about them. And I don't know about you, but as soon as I like hear the first carol, I'm right back in like primary school choirs, and we were all in them. It wasn't just like I got chosen or something. And I can almost smell the wooden pews and the navy carpets, and all of a sudden I'm just in this place. And it's maybe not exactly where the authors of these carols and these hymns meant us to go. They wanted to take us somewhere as they penned these songs, but I don't think it was exactly where we end up most of the time. And so we wanted to pause and ask that question: do you end up in nostalgia, good or bad or other? Or do you end up at the feet of Jesus, at the King of Kings, worshiping him? Do you find yourselves, as we sing carols, connected to his presence and his power? Or do you find yourself connected to a broken message of a consumer-obsessed culture? Because it screams at us from every angle from about the 2nd of September forward. It screams a message. And the message of the King is a little more subtle. And it takes a little more intention for us to lean into. And if we're not careful, this month will pass us by. And these songs will trip off our tongues and be done for another year and filed away. And we'll miss some of the rich heritage and beauty that they carry. So that's what we're trying to do. Hopefully it's helpful as we continue to tease out some of the thoughts behind them. So this morning we're looking at one of my favorites, which is O Little Town of Bethlehem. And we sang it already, we'll sing it again as we close. It was written in 1868. Oh, hold on, let's turn this on, that's going to help us. It was written in 1868 by this rather serious looking dude. He's called Rector Philip Brooks. He was Episcopalian priest in Philadelphia at the time. And he wrote it 2 years after a trip in 1866 where he'd actually spent Christmas in the Holy Land. And in Christmas Eve of 1866, he joined with a whole procession as they headed out into the fields outside Bethlehem. Now, according to him, they took him to the spot where they said the shepherds were. He thought it was rather nonsense. But as he traveled through those fields, he knew he must have come close to where the shepherds were those first Christmas. And as they worshipped and as they waited together in those fields and looked to Bethlehem, they processed into the town at midnight and worshipped in the Christmas year. And it stirred something in him and it moved something in him. And so as he returned and went back to his post a couple of years later, he penned this hymn. And he actually wrote it as a children's hymn, as a children's song. It was for their Sunday school Christmas service that 1868. And it carries that kind of childlike simplicity. It's probably why I like it. And it paints this picture for us of something that he clearly had experienced firsthand. And it opens with that beautiful first few lines: O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. And straight away, we feel that simplicity. We can feel that kind of childlike response. He's painting this picture of what he's encountered, what he's seen himself. But he's also drawing on this prophetic voice from Micah chapter 5. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, or something, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. Straight away, he begins to paint this picture of something important about Christmas, something that I think we sometimes miss. And it's that small things and insignificant things really matter to God. Micah prophesies from hundreds, if not thousands of years before, that this little, tiny, nowhere, nothing ever happens in town of Bethlehem was going to become the center of something important. That God was going to choose something small and insignificant and unseen to do something huge that would change the whole of humanity and the whole of history. And Phillips starts this little hymn with, "O little town of Bethlehem." He's almost putting it down. He's playing it down. He's buying into this thing from Micah that God uses small things. He uses insignificant things. He uses the little things. And they really matter to him. And if culture screams anything to us about Christmas, it's that bigger is better, right? You got to go big. You got to buy more than you had last year. Every year I buy too big a turkey. Right? Every year you're like, I'll remember that for next year and then I'll make it a little bigger. Like every year, the message that comes from around us is more, 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 bigger, bigger, bigger. And then if we're honest, sometimes we step into places like this that should be a haven, and you hear a different message, but sometimes it comes with equal pressure. You hear us say, we need to buy some coats for the vulnerable in our city, and you're thinking, I don't even know how I'm going to keep the electric on in January. Or you hear us talk about what would it look like to embrace the lonely this Christmas, to welcome them in, and you feel the pressure of, I don't know how I'm going to cope with my own family. I don't really like them. How am I going to bring in someone else? I can't take in a refugee family for Christmas. And the pressure escalates. And it rises, and more and more. And I want to say as emphatically as I can this morning, breathe. Just breathe. Step aside from the pressure. I release you. Jesus releases you. There is no pressure to perform this Christmas. You don't have to buy the lie of the more and the extra and the bigger and the better. The small encounters of our lives really matter. The seemingly insignificant little choices of our lives really matter. I've been pondering over this thought recently. We all get the idea of collateral damage, don't we? When something bad happens, like the repercussions spread out, right? Car crashes on the West Link tomorrow morning at like 8 in the morning. That's bad for the people in the cars. Might impact their lives depending on the severity over the next weeks or months or years. It might begin to impact their close family as finances are hit, etc., etc. But I tell you what, it's also going to hit me on the Newton-Ards Road trying to get into work, right? The whole city is going to go into gridlock. We're going to be late for work and our bosses are going to, not my boss, but some bosses are going to get mad. And it escalates, right? Collateral damage. We get it, yeah? Did you know, I'm trying to coin this phrase, there's such a thing as collateral good. The little, the seemingly insignificant things that you do add up to ripples in other people's lives. We fully underestimate the power of the little good, of the little kindness that we do each day. Most of us in this room did not come to faith because angels showed up in our bedroom going, oh! Most of us did not come to faith with a massive explosion. Most of us came to faith slowly as we encountered little bits of good, little bits of kindness, little bits of the kingdom over long periods of time that seemed insignificant, right? And we maybe hit a moment of crisis or a moment of calling or a moment of encounter, but it was built upon the collateral good of lots and lots and lots and lots of other little encounters. What if this Christmas we took the pressure off the big thing and simply looked to sow goodness, kindness, joy, peace in the little things of our lives? If Christmas screams of anything, it screams that the insignificant things matter, that the little things matter, that they count. I don't know if you know this, we have an incredible team who head out on the streets every Friday morning. They gather together to pray for the homeless and the addicted in our city, and then they take to the streets to simply see who they can encounter, to see what God might be doing and the brokenness and the broken places in our city. A few weeks back, they encountered a homeless young man on the streets on Royal Avenue, and they began to chat with him for a while. And then they felt like they needed to just buy him a cup of tea. So one of the team headed into that wonderful establishment of Greg's. And as they were waiting in the queue, they turned around to see a young mother with a pram and a couple of kids really struggling to get in the door. And so they just turned around and opened the door and held it for them and welcomed them into the shop, as if we have the right to do that. And it transpired that they were a stranger in our city. They didn't know where they were. They didn't know anyone else. And so they welcomed them to our city. Just demonstrated kindness, served them a little bit as they got to the front of the queue to order their tea for, not for them, but for the person out on the street. The person behind the desk just looked them in the eyes and smiled and said, "This one's on us." Collateral good. Just ripples out. You have no idea the impact of the little things you do. This Christmas, I release you in Jesus' name to not feel the pressure of having to transform everybody else's lives around you, of not taking on the weight of more than you can carry. What would it look like to simply be present in the little moments of every day? To look to offer kindness, the welcome of Jesus, the encouragement, the hope. What would that look like for you? Little things matter. Collateral good. Phillips goes on. Yet in the dark street shineth. It's really hard to say that and not do the like. The everlasting light. And then this line. I don't know what like the positive version of haunted is, but whatever that is, it's done that to me for years, this line. I learned in the car on the way here today that that's called an antonym. God bless the AQE. And thank you that it's over. Well done, parents of P7 kids. Well done. You endured it. Well done. Well done. This line has been with me for decades now. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. I love that line. I love that line. It reverberates back to Micah, where they talk about this. The prophet talks about this one whose origins are of old, of ancient times, that he's going to come. He's going to set his people free. He's going to come and bring hope and peace and joy and all the stuff that we get to. And in this moment in that first Christmas, as Jesus arrives onto the scene of history, Israel's in longing. And we heard about that a couple of weeks ago. They're desperate for someone to come. They're looking for this Messiah, this Savior, this King. They're longing. And the hopes and the fears are escalating year on year and generation on generation. There's this desperation sense. And we all live with hopes and dreams. We all live with expectation and with doubt and with fear. And there just seems to be something about Christmas that heightens that, right? Depending on how you view life and how you think about Christmas, somewhere between September and October, this lens just begins to slide over how we think about our life, how we view our life. It just seems to heighten our hopes and heighten our fears and heighten our expectations. And by the time we reach December, we're kind of almost in this frenzy. And for a chunk of us, we live with this huge expectation, this weight of expectation as we look to Christmas. Like, this is going to be the year. We're going to nail the turkey. And then maybe the sarky comments from our mother will stop. And we're going to get the right presents so there's no sad faces or no fake smiles on Christmas morning. We're not going to forget anyone this year, so there's no awkward digging in the regifting cupboard, right? In a panic. We're not going to let Grandpa get drunk and say mildly racist things in the corner. We're going to get the balance right of rest and fun, of party and family. We're going to just get perfect family photos for Instagram. And of course, this is going to be the year that our partner will somehow psychically delve into the darkest recesses of our mind and know what we really wanted when we said we wanted socks. And they're going to buy the right present. Or maybe yours is a little deeper. Maybe your expectation and your hope is that this year I won't be alone at Christmas. Or this year I won't go into crippling debt by January, or this year I might get to be with my kids or see my kids. And those hopes and those longings and those desires aren't in themselves bad things. But when we hang them on a season, they're just like bubbles made out of cement. They're just going to come crashing down. This season cannot bear the weight of those hopes. And maybe for you, it's not Christmas that you hang them on. Maybe you hang it on summer. Maybe you're already thinking, if I can hold out to June in my 2 weeks in Spain, life will be fine. It's a long way away. Maybe it's the promotion and work you hang your hopes on. If I could just get up another rung, life would be fine. If I could just find a house. If I could just find a spouse. If I could just get some kids. If I could just get my kids out of the house. If I could just find the right church that finally gets me and isn't full of broken people. Good luck with that one. Whatever it is that you hang your hopes on, more often than not, it cannot bear the weight of your expectations. It will not bear the weight. And we hang this massive amount of hope on this coming season, or on one day, or on one meal, or whatever it is for you. And when it doesn't deliver, when it can't deliver the things that we've hung upon it, we do one of two things. We either internalize it and we go, man, I'm an idiot. Of course the turkey needed longer. Of course grandma couldn't sit beside Auntie so-and-so. That was never going to work out. I'm an idiot. How did I do that? And we take it inside. If I only planned better, if I was only a better this or a better that, if I could just work out how to do this, then we'd get it right next year. I'm going to have a spreadsheet for timings. We're going to get it worked out. And we internalize it. We're like, let's hit the gym hard in January. Let's start saving in January. Next year, we're going to nail this thing. It's going to be wonderful. Or we externalize it. Man, if my family weren't just a dysfunctional mess. If only my kids weren't so selfish. If only someone would lend a hand, anyone. If only I could just get like 5 minutes to sit down on my own and have a cuppa. If only we could run away to the Bahamas for Christmas and do it there. However we handle that gap between expectations and reality, all we do is stuff the disappointment down and we ramp up the expectation that next year we'll get it right. Next year we'll get it better. Or maybe you're on the other side of the fence. You don't look to Christmas with hope. Maybe you actually look to Christmas with fear and with dread. Maybe you're already holding out for January the 1st. For it all to be over again for another year, to simply survive. See, Christmas has a way of taking those past hurts and those past disappointments and rejections and failures and seemingly escalating them. It feels like everyone else is having a big old time, like every TV ad ever, and we're the only ones who are slowly dying on the inside. We all have hurts, and we all have disappointments, and we all have failures. We all have moments of deep sorrow in our lives. And Christmas or any other season cannot heal those hurts. It cannot heal those disappointments. You will not be healed if you simply get Christmas right. That pressure to be perfect, that loneliness, that childhood disappointment that just seems to crash back in with the first carol every year. Christmas cannot heal those things. No matter how hard you try, it will not heal them. Christmas cannot bear the weight of our hopes, and it cannot heal the hurts and then the fears, and the fears, because those things are not about Christmas. They might feel like they are. They might be centered around Christmas. The hurts and the disappointments and the rejections might even have happened at Christmas, but they're built on something that runs much deeper. And we have to step aside from the season for a second. We've got to zoom back a little from the season. We've got to recognize that as Rector Brooks here invites us to declare the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. He isn't talking about a season. He isn't talking about a moment. He isn't talking about a perfect experience. He definitely wasn't talking about getting the turkey right. He's talking about a person. He's talking about Jesus, the Messiah, he's talking of Emmanuel, of God with us in human form, present, Jesus, the one, the only one who can bear the weight of all our hopes and dreams, the only one who can heal and restore and release us from our doubts and our fears and our disappointments. It's in him that we find our rest. It's in him we find our peace. It's in him we find satisfaction for the deepest longings of our soul. It's Jesus who can take us right back to those moments of rejection, those moments of disappointment that just seem to cascade through our lives. And he can heal those memories. And he can unhook our pain. And he can bear the weight of your anger and your sorrow. He can do what no one and no thing else can do. He says it himself in Matthew 11. Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Hang them on me. I can bear the weight. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in me tonight. This carol is not saying Jesus can give us the perfect Christmas. I don't think that's even a thing, really. As we sing this, we are singing, we are declaring that Jesus alone, as he arrived that first Christmas, came to bear the weight of the real hopes, the real longings, and the deep fears of our souls. And when we lift those things off a season, we're free to see it as it really is. Messed up and skewed and broken by the world around us, yeah. But it's a chance to slow down. It's a chance to be with those we love, to enjoy some food, to exchange some gifts, to bless, not to impress or to buy affection, but to bless. I bless you to take the pressure off your Christmas this year, to step aside from the consumer madness, to recognize that any room with more than zero people in it contains brokenness and dysfunction. That isn't your fault. That isn't unique to your family. The Facebook photos you see of perfection are a lie. I bless you to be honest with your fears, honest with your doubts, honest with your disappointments. Don't save them for January. Don't hope that you can hold them in on December 25th until everybody leaves at like 7 p.m. and then you scream at each other or drink or whatever you do. I bless you to bring those to Jesus right now, to hang them on him, to bring them to the one who can actually heal you and restore you and set you free. Picture I had for us this morning as I prayed for us was just of the Lord releasing a pressure valve, of lifting the pressure off your Christmas this year. Jesus can bear the weight of all your hopes, all your dreams, and all your fears. Not the ones about Christmas, but all of them. What sits deeper underneath those deep fears of who you might be and who you might be becoming. Those deep longings of who you want to be but aren't sure you could ever reach. He can hold it all together. Bring it to him. I love what Paul writes in Colossians 1. I love it in the Message. He was, this talking of Jesus, he was supreme in the beginning and leading the resurrection parade. He is supreme in the end. From beginning to end, he's there, towering far above everything, everyone. So spacious is he, so roomy, that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Where did I go? Can somebody jump me back? There we are. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death, his blood that poured down from the cross. Jesus can bear the weight of all the longings in your soul. It's what he came to do. Because he hung on the cross, we can hang our hopes and our dreams on him, and they will be met. It's okay to not be okay this Christmas. It's okay to have brokenness and hurt and pain and disappointment. He can handle it. Don't save it up for Christmas evening. Bring it to him now. Let him release that valve. He's big enough to bear the weight. That's why we worship him. That's why we surrender all we are to him. And when we do so, we get what the rest of this hymn talks about. For Christ is born of Mary and gathered all above, while mortals sleep, the angels keep their watch of wondering love. O morning stars together, proclaim thy holy birth, and praises sing to God the King, and peace to man on earth. How silently this wondrous gift is given, so God imparts to human hearts the blessings of his heaven. It comes as a gift. It's freely received, not earned, not with the fearful weight of, can I give something equal in return? Do you ever play that Christmas game? How much do you think this box is worth so I know how to, which present to buy back? It's not what God's like. He gives a free gift of his blessing, of the blessings of heaven. He pours it out. And if you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus this Christmas, please hear this. You have nothing to earn. There's nothing you could earn from him. God wants to simply give you his peace and give you his joy, his forgiveness, his presence. He wants you to experience it. God imparts to human hearts the blessings of his heaven. This isn't a knowledge thing. This isn't knowing about peace. This isn't knowing about joy. This isn't knowing about rest. This is living in it, experiencing it, receiving it from him as a gift. And it wasn't just for Christmas. This wasn't just a one-time thing. No ear may hear his coming, but in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him still, the dear Christ enters in. He's still coming today. And that last verse that finishes with that incredible line, "Oh, come to us, abide with us, our Lord Emmanuel." He's still in the business of meeting with a broken world, filling it with his peace, filling it with his presence, lifting off the pressure and the weight that you feel of the season, and bringing hope and bringing joy. God is still at work. He still wants to meet you this Christmas. His presence is available to all of us. He still comes to abide with us. The band can come back up. We're nearly done. It's his presence that makes us whole. As Brooks finishes this carol, it's, "Oh, come to us, abide with us, our Lord Emmanuel," God with us. This season will not fix you. This season will not be a joy to your soul if you aren't living in the presence of Jesus. If you aren't receiving that gift that came that first Christmas. This is our longing this Christmas and every Christmas for our community and our city, is that they would encounter the presence of Jesus, that they wouldn't hear about religion this Christmas, that they wouldn't hear about nice ideas this Christmas, but that they would get to encounter the living God who wants to abide with them. That's what we're longing for this Christmas. And for me, this whole carol from beginning to end just screams that this message that God uses the small things to demonstrate his deep desire to be present with his people. God uses the small, the insignificant things to scream that he wants to bear the weight of our hopes and our dreams and our fears and our longings, and he wants to be with his people. What if you were one of those small things this Christmas? What might that look like? What if you were the gift that God wanted to give this Christmas to someone around you? What if he wanted you to demonstrate his desire to be with his people? In the little things, in the ways you encounter this month, in the ways you live out your work over the next few weeks as stress and anxiety and pressure abound all around us, what if we were a different presence because of who we know, because he still abides with us? What small things could you step into this Christmas? Next week, as we do candles and carols, We simply want to invite our city to encounter the presence of Emmanuel, who still wants to be with us. We would love to invite you to be part of that. One of the small things you could do this week is to intentionally invite. And I know I say this every year and every week, and you kind of go, yeah, yeah, Alan's doing his thing again. But we're really serious. We are praying hard as a team that people would encounter the presence of Jesus this year. And your small thing, the best gift that you could potentially give this year, is an invitation to come and encounter the King of Kings. And actually, we wanted to do something a little different. As we sing this last carol, as we close again this morning, I've put a couple of baskets up on the wall up here. And there's bundles of invites that we've prayed over and we've asked God to bless and power. And this side, there's about 15 in each bundle. And this side, there's about 5 in each bundle. And I think there's something of taking a small prophetic act. Of course, you could lift as many as you want from the table at the back. But as we worship, if God is stirring you to say, I want to bless some people, I want to invite some people, I want to take a risk this Christmas, would you come and just grab a bundle? Just as we worship, just come and grab. There's something in that act of moving that engages our hearts and engages our body with what God is doing. Would you take a risk? You can take as many as you want. And would you consider this Christmas what it looks like to be the small thing that connects people with the deep desire of God to be present with us?
Thanks for listening to this message. For all the latest information about what's happening in the life of our church, or if you have any questions or comments, head over to BelfastCityVineyard.com.